listening to the Colorado Rapids podcast, holding the high line with Rabbi and Red. Do a great job, and obviously they have to talk a lot about a team that is struggling. But he was mentioning the players, they were mentioning the players that had moved on, and obviously Michael Vargas at the top of the list, a guy who has been here for some great seasons with Colorado, will be the one that's missed the most. He is now with the LA Galaxy.
Altitude's undefeated.
Crap, able to punch it on whatever it was in.
Not a huge fan of makeup.
I don't know where I was going. I looked like I was running and started to talk to someone. I don't know what I was doing.
I tell you what, Matt, we don't get much by you, that's for sure.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red, the unofficial Rapids research resource of Max Bratos and Apple TV. It's Thursday, August 24th, and my name is Matt Pollard. The Rapids lost to LAFC. It was bad and predictable again. Fans and pundits are contemplating Robin Fraser's long-term and short-term job security with the club, and I am currently in the middle of a power outage in my building, so tonight I will be reunited with my good old friend, Mr. Darkness. Joining me now, a man who has been listening to Fall For You by Secondhand Serenade all day today, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Good to see you, Matt. How's it going, man?
It's been a rough week. I'm glad that tomorrow is Friday, Mark, and I'm sure like a lot of people listening to this podcast, I am relieved that once again, I do not have to watch the Rapids lose at home on Saturday.
Yeah, there's an Orlando Pride San Diego Wave match tomorrow, which apparently, according to the news today, is one of the last chances. Well, at least you'll get to see a still existing San Diego football club. Because
oh yes, rest in peace, San Diego Loyal.
Not officially, but apparently they're doing the thing with the hiatus, I think. So, but I think with MLS planning to come into San Diego, it's only a matter of time with the USL brand.
Because that worked out so great for Austin Bolt.
And Rochester.
And Fresno, and pretty much every single other USL team that has taken a hiatus.
I think Reno did a hiatus too. Yeah, no, it's pretty brutal. But I think, you know, like, and St. Louis had the situation, and so did Charlotte, and so did, and now San Diego, where an MLS team moves into your market, and you're like, what's our purpose? Like, can we exist? Charlotte dropped down a league and still exists. We don't feel bad for Charlotte, though, because their owner is garbage. But we do feel bad for St. Louis FC because they were a lovely football club, and they're no longer in existence. But, you know, I mean, those fans, you know, were able to move on to MLS, and they're having a pretty, pretty, pretty good year in with St. Louis City. A lot better than our team, Matt. I mean, me and you both picked St. Louis, and all the pundits picked them for 14th in the Western Conference. Matt, do you remember, I was just looking at this the other day, do you remember where you picked the Rapids in our preseason poll?
I believe I had the Rapids 8th. Once we had the new playoff format and everything, and we had all that, I think I had the Rapids.
I have it in my official thing as you having them 7th and me having them 9th, so average it out, and we're both wrong is the important thing. We're
yes.
Both very, very wrong. Like, we were both in the theory of, like, This lineup's okay, it's not great, but we should be able to contend for the playoffs, right? And the answer is nope. All right, before we let's get to an actual show lineup before we actually, you know, we make our banter topic how bad are the Colorado Rapids, which
yes.
Is basically the point of the entire podcast. Go ahead, Matt.
Okay, so Mark, I briefly want to touch on, since last we podcasted, Inter Miami has won their first ever major trophy. They defeated...
tying the Colorado Rapids with total overall career trophies.
Yeah, and they're going to pass them on September 27th when they kick the snot out of Houston at home. But so, Mark, Inter Miami and Lionel Messi win the Leagues Cup. It was an absolutely bonkers finals between the 90 minutes, between the 120 minutes, and then penalties. Drake Callender doing his best Emi Martinez impressions this past week. And then another absolutely wild semifinal for them again on the road at FC Cincinnati. And then Mark will finally get the answer this coming weekend because finally, Inter Messi will be playing their first game in MLS play. And so we get to finally know the answer to the question, can Lionel Messi do it on a Saturday night in Harrison, New Jersey? Mark, what have we made of Inter Miami? Are they the new super club in MLS? And are they ever going to lose another game as long as Lionel Messi wears their pink shirt?
I mean, they might. I mean, that Cincinnati game was really, really close for a while. And that was crazy that, like, it was at 68 minutes, Cincinnati was up 2-0. And I was like, wow, this is... Messi is invincible. And then it turns out that Messi is, in fact, invincible because they scored two more goals in the next few minutes. And then they went on to score in the first half of extra time to win 3-2. That was Cincinnati got a goal at the death in the like 120 plus to take it to PKs. So that was a bonker balls kind of finish of a game. I think for me as a Pittsburgh resident, the only thing that kind of like really was painful for us, not painful, but like, you know, the Riverhounds lost to Cincinnati just two rounds ago. And so it very much could have been Lionel Messi here in Pittsburgh. And then my mental wheels were spinning whether the Riverhounds would have had that match here at Highmark Stadium, which seats 6,000 people, or whether they would have moved over to the former Heinz Stadium, now known as Acrisure, the Throwball Stadium, which seats, I think, like 65 or 70,000. Because they, you know, it's like a lot of sports cities where, like, they don't actually have a deal with them. But anyways, this is neither here nor there. Messi's pretty unbelievable. I mean, he's just putting...
Surprise.
Goals. Yeah, well, no, he's... I mean, I thought he'd be great, but he's been better than advertised. I mean, I don't think anybody thought he would have the kind of storybook finish of his first game of curling in a free kick perfectly to win the game at the death, you know? And then every game has seemed to have had a moment like that where he is just absolutely clowning fools and just doing absolutely devastating, unbelievable things to opposing teams. And like, nobody can handle him. And he just uplifts the rest of the team to a degree that is unbelievable. This last game, you know, two assists, which was, and they were both incredible, incredible assists. Just clutch, you know, pinpoint accuracy on the move from 30 yards away. He's incredible.
He's the best player in the world, Mark. He is at worst the third best player in the history of the sport. I think there's a
very... Who's your number two?
I'd put Pele number one, and then I think it's a coin flip between him and Diego Maradona for me personally.
Nice.
And then I think clearly at four, and I don't know that we have any Ronaldo stands anymore listening to this podcast, Mark. But I would put Johan Cruyff ahead of Cristiano Ronaldo.
That's funny. I put Cruyff as number two just because he kind of changed the game. But I think we're all living in a world where we don't know so much about players pre-1950. So Garrincha is a really famous player who some people would swear is a top five all-time player, but you know, he really lived in a black and white world. You know, his best years were in the 50s, so things like that. But yeah, I'm at least with you 100% on the best player of all time. So
yes, I'll give you, I should say, Mark, that is players. If you want to talk about the influence you've done as a player and a head coach, well, I don't know. Well, I think it's an easy argument. Johan Cruyff is not the best player of all time. He's not the best coach of all time. I think if you combine those two, he's had a bigger influence on the sport than we've had in modern day. He was obviously, you know, him and then the head coach at Ajax and the Dutch national team, whose name I always forget, pioneered total football, which obviously we saw at AFC Richmond. We saw it at Barcelona, and then that was the predecessor to tiki-taka. You do not have modern day Pep Guardiola at any of his three club stops without what Johan Cruyff did for him before as well, and I think that's worth noting. Last thing that I'll say on the Messi stuff as well, Mark, there's been a decent amount and rightfully so, backlash to the circus aspect of this. You know, there were a number of knockoff kits that I saw from the Cincy Soccer Talk guys were talking about with the semifinal the other day, last night. And then there's been, I think it's been substantiated, Mark, from the people in the New England Revolution beat who I am around are saying the email that you've seen surfacing around of the ticket sales rep for the Revs at looking to get people to renew and to sign up to new season tickets for the Revolution next year, saying to do it because they'll get a home game against Messi, and Messi scored a goal in every single game that he's played in. Therefore, you have a 100% chance, if you buy season tickets and go to that game, of seeing Messi score against the New England Revolution. And then you've just seen other stuff as well. The circus is here, folks. Like it or not, soccer is in a position in both countrywide and in the majority of markets as well, to the point where that is a selling point that is marketable and is a source for extended revenue. And like it or not, teams are going to take advantage of that. Everybody wants their cut of the Messi pie, Mark. And so, you know, like you're saying, you know, the River Hounds, you know, season ticket holder was like the, oh, I want my seat at Highmark and everything. And then now, because it's an extra Open Cup game and it's not a part of my season ticket, you know, you're charging me quadruple of what you normally would. And then I have to go out to Heinz Field and there's going to be a bunch of messy Barcelona stands out there and everything. Like, this is the reality of it. If you want to say that you would rather have that at the expense of not having a Zlatan Ibrahimovic, a Carlos Vela, a David Beckham, the league is not where it is where today. And so I think that's the unfortunate reality, and we're going to have to live with it. Fortunately, Mark, I don't think we have to worry about Messi stands completely invading the Colorado Rapids, the Richard. I think, if anything, the Rapids are going to be on the road schedule next year for Miami, so they can get a cupcake, you know, 3-0 win, and have Danny Wilson just absolutely clowned like a golden cone by the GOAT.
We'll jump off that bridge when we get to it next year.
Mark, we normally don't talk about this a whole lot because it's a foregone conclusion. I think it will very much be this weekend, but the Holding the High London Derby is on as my Fulham FC are headed to the Emirates to take on your Arsenal. Mark, the Gooners with two wins, but obviously two one-goal wins so far to start the season. And this past Saturday might be the worst day in Fulham history, between a 3-0 spanking against Brentford at home at the Cottage. You had Tim Ream with his first red card for the Cottagers as well, so he will be on available for this game. And then we found out pregame that Alexander Mitrovic was traveling internationally to go join Al Hilal in Saudi Arabia. And then it was confirmation by the coaching staff in the club after that as well. So, Mark, no Mitro, no Tim Ream. I would like to preemptively congratulate you on Arsenal's 3-0 victory this coming Saturday morning.
Yeah, I mean, just picking up Kai Havertz and having him in the midfield alongside Martin Odegaard, and Bukayo Saka being healthy and, you know, looking like he's just playing his best is really good for this team. So Saliba's also back at center back for the club. Arsenal will be missing their new left back, Tomiyasu, who drew a second yellow against Crystal Palace this last week. So starting off well for Arsenal, but of course, you know, Arsenal have now put themselves in the position that fans have always wanted them to be in, which is really challenging for a trophy. But with the moves that some of the teams in the offseason, the Premiership, Championship altogether, but they instead of just finishing fourth, which is, you know, where Arsenal fans are accustomed to us being, but the challenge with that is, you know, it's a season-long slog, and the other teams in the league have really put up some really great numbers and really great, you know, they're really talented and fantastic teams this year. Liverpool look like they might be making a run at it again. Slow start for Man United, but you know, you can never count them out. And Chelsea made a lot of really great upgrades. So they are, once again, kind of maybe back at it. The question I think on everybody's mind is Man City in it to win it this year? Is that going to work for them? Do they have what it's going to take? Or is that is this the year that maybe some of their off-season moves and their departures are really going to catch up with them? So, you know, if we're handicapping the league, it's really a good place to start. The other place to handicap, of course, when you're looking Premier League, and I think maybe I should throw this to you, being that you're a Fulham fan, is who are the three teams that we're thinking are most likely to go down? Who are the teams that are worrisome to you early on if you've watched some matches?
Yeah, well, first of all, Mark, you know, obviously it's a big week coming up for Tony Khan and the technical staff at Fulham. Obviously, we've gotten, you know, the largest transfer fee in the history of the club for Fulham that nearly, I think, based on the numbers that we've seen, it more than doubles Ryan Sessegnon going to Tottenham Hotspur. So there's cash flow in there, Mark. It should be pointed out also as well, Rabbi, that we are now outside of, in terms of the timeline for financial fair play, Fulham is now the, what happened when we did a Fulham spending the $100 million when we came up the first time recently, winning against Aston Villa in the promotion playoff, and then spent $100 million that summer, and then spectacularly finished 19th as well, that money spent is no longer a factor there. So the shackles of financial fair play are off, and then we just got a big influx of cash. But now there's a bunch of teams that know that and are maybe going to charge us more than, I don't know, maybe Bernd Leno for $8 million and then 11 plus add-ons as well, which was just an absolute steal, Mark. And how dare Stan Kroenke make the worst business decision of his life, sending away the greatest German goalkeeper of all time to play for Fulham FC. Right now, on paper right now, Fulham's ceiling is probably 15th. Without Alexander Mitrovic, with how thin the squad is as well, I do think we'll make two or three sneaky good under the radar signings as well that are going on there. But to answer the question directly, Rabbi, I think Luton and Sheffield United are, you know, the two that everybody kind of has going in there. If you look at their recruitment strategy that they've done, former Colorado Rapid Austin Trusty to the Blades notwithstanding, they've mostly signed players that are kind of on that fringe between relegation fodder in the Premier League and then competing for at least the top five, top six in the Championship as well. And so Luton is definitely setting themselves up for let's get relegated and then be in a position to compete for promotion next season. I think Sheffield United has done a little bit of that as well. I can't remember the name of their two players. They were fantastic in the FA Cup games against Wrexham, but those two players have been sold, albeit for big fees, by Sheffield United standards as well. And then I think it's the usual suspects after that, Mark. You know, I look at Everton, you know, still like net spend, it's going to be a late winner to win 1-0 to stay up on goal difference on the final day for them this year as well. Things look really bad at Wolves and look super toxic. Say what you will, at least everybody in the front office is on the same page for Fulham, especially now that we finally have some clarity on Alexander Mitrovic. And then I would be so sad to see Roy Hodgson's ultimately final coaching appointment be him going down, even though it's to the other club that claims him in our weird dual custody situation. Richard Terry's Crystal Palace, Mark, are now obviously without Zaha, and so I wonder what their attacking prowess is going to be like. I think those teams are in it. I think if Fulham does a really good job of getting a striker, Mark, if Balogun wants to come on, you know, on a cheap deal as well, that'd be nice. I think we need some more fullback coverage and another midfielder as well. If we spend the money well, like we typically do in the final 3-4 days of the window, like we have in the last couple of years under the current leadership as well, I think we can avoid relegation. I think we can be, you know, on the top of the scrap heap, even if we are in the scrap as well. But I don't think we're hitting 50 points. I don't think we're finishing above Chelsea. And I don't think we're competing with Brentford this year. Mark, last thing that we'll mention, I already said all of my thoughts on this in an article on Burgundy Wave, and we're already 20 minutes in, banter topic, and my laptop battery is at 70%, so I'll just quickly throw it to you, Mark. William Yarbrough had knee surgery this past Tuesday. That was to deal with a tear in his meniscus. The club put the timeline at 6 to 8 weeks. The six-week mark from the surgery date, listeners, would put us at October 3rd. The Rapids have a game on October 4th. That would be the third-to-last game of the season. Mark, there is a very real possibility that William Yarbrough has played his final competitive game of the season for the final game of the season that he has played in. There's a very low probability that he is back and in contention to be selected for a squad, with the Rapids still having something to play for. And just, Rabbi, the writing that I've seen on the wall so much based on what they did to get Illich originally, what they did in the summer as well, I feel like it's been for months now a preformed conclusion, a pre-made decision by the front office that they were not going to renew or not pick up the option for Yarbrough in 2024 and roll with Marko Ilić in goal as the starter in 2024. Mark, as our resident expert knee injury person, your thoughts on what this means for Yarbrough and what this means for the goalkeeping position? Or does it matter because there's nothing? Manuel Neuer at the height of his powers was not making that 1-0 the other night.
No, I think you said it. Your question is so good, it's half the answer, which is Yarbrough is probably shut down for the year. he was probably his choice. I mean, I think one of the things about meniscus injuries is that you can kind of play through them. They're not, I mean, you know, they might affect your ability to cut and move comfortably and feel confident in your knee. But, you know, you can, it's the kind of thing where your knee gets sore after you play on it and then you ice it more at the end of the match. So I think this was one of those, I can play through it, but there's nothing to play for right now, so we're going to shut it down. There was a former Rapids player, Benny Fellhaber, had a similar situation many years ago where when the season got pointless, he went for elective surgery and was shut down for a couple weeks because it didn't matter because ultimately the season was lost. I think with Yarbrough, I think you said it right, Matt. It's very unlikely after the signing of Ilitch that they're going to keep Yarbrough. The question that I think we've been floating around with a bunch of people who are in the know, particularly the other Rapids media folk, is whether the Colorado Rapids internally have finally decided that Abraham Rodriguez, who has been with Colorado Springs, is maybe finally ready, and he's also been with Rapids too, is finally ready to maybe step into a backup role and start to grow into a bigger role. Or there's an alternative here, which is that Adrian Beaudry is ready to claim the throne. Beaudry is, I think, either 16 or 17 years old, and reports are that he's, you know, physically gotten bigger and stronger. But it would be, I mean, this is a Gaga Slonina level kind of situation where we're talking about a very young kid at goalkeeper, especially, which is a position that, you know, most people think, you know, you mature at a much later rate. I think the ideal age for an outfield player in soccer seems to be like 26. The ideal age for the best year of a keeper, Matt's flashing 30. I think it's like 31, 6-5 and pick 'em between the two of us. Yeah, I mean, so, but whichever, you know, player, or the Rapids could go out on the free market at the end of the season and go get one of many very good backups that are bouncing around the league. They could take a third dip on Clint Irwin if they wanted to. They're not gonna, but it's a fun possibility. Personally, you know my favorite idea, Matt, always, which is go out and get one of the top five best goalkeepers in USL and make them an offer. You know, the top five goalkeepers in USL the last couple of years, guys like Greg Ranjit Singh, who got signed to an MLS deal, Josh Cohen, who played for Sacramento, who then got signed to I think Maccabi Tel Aviv in Israel, and then wound up playing in, or does he play for Haifa? I don't remember, but he wound up playing in Europa and Champions League level matches over the last couple seasons. So you can jump from the USL to a very, very high level, especially a goalkeeper, and do really well. I think of all the positions in the second division of the United States, that's really maybe one of the best places for bargain buys. So that's my take on the situation with William Yarbrough. We've probably seen the last of him. It'll be interesting to see what he does in the offseason. Remember, he is a fluent Spanish speaker and grew up half in the United States, half in Mexico. So I think he'll be a very hot commodity also because he'll be someone that Liga MX coaches and GMs will be chasing after. So but if this is the last we've ever seen of William Yarbrough, I think he served us really well. He was a really great player the last couple of years. I think he had kind of a so-so year last year, but he chased that this year with, 2 years ago, he had a kind of a so-so year. But last year was a pretty solid year. He's one of the bright spots on the ball club. This year, I think he was maybe one of the only bright spots on the ball club. So if it's the last we've ever seen of him, we wish him well.
Yeah, I think it'd be a really darn shame, Mark, if it turns out that Yarbrough's final game with the Colorado Rapids was just him getting no help in front of him in that loss to Toluca. You know, I think you look at it, he comes in, Mark obviously was one of the anchors to the success in 2021. This past April, he passed Clint not Clint Irwin, excuse me, Matt Pickens for the most clean sheets in club history. That's, you know, not insignificant. And, you know, Mark, at the risk of having Jason Maxwell shout Joe Cannon's name right now, I think, unfortunately, Yarbrough follows a really long pedigree of Rapids goalkeepers who are very good, who are certainly above average, who on the whole of their career stats, either in MLS or with the Rapids specifically, padded their stats because of their longevity and otherwise were on pretty mid teams and their stats otherwise weren't impressive because of the team in front of them. You know, there have been plenty of games that we've seen, Mark, in the last 18 months where we felt William Yarbrough was the best player for the Rapids, where we felt that he had a good game and the team lost by multiple goals because he had no help in front of him. And I could say that about Joe Cannon. I could say that about early Clint Irwin, who came on, you know, basically on a free and work, you know, on a hope and a prayer with a trial and then worked his way into becoming a starting goalkeeper and made a career out of it. I could say it about Zach McMath, who came in and was having a fantastic season. And then he gets completely, you know, Wally pipped unfairly by Tim Howard. And there's a number of stats you could look at for 2016 where McMath in the first half as a starter was better than Tim Howard down the stretch in 2016. And I think if this is it for William Yarbrough, he had decent longevity for a couple of years, put up some good stats when he had a good team in front of him, and then otherwise looked mediocre because he didn't get any help and he tried really hard on ultimately a sinking ship. Okay, Rabbi, let's get to it. This past yesterday, listeners, at time of recording, the Colorado Rapids played Los Angeles FC. They lost by a score of 4-0. We got starting first team debuts from the new number 10 and new number 9 in Rafael Navajo, the DP striker, and in the U22 loaned signing of Sydney Tavares. I'm not going to go through each of the individual goals. Mark, this was eerily similar to the other four games that the Rapids have played at LAFC, all five of them being losses, most of them being non-competitive, folks. It came out, the Rapids came out, and they were really intense, and they matched the intensity with LAFC for about 15 to 20 minutes. They were poor on the ball, they were poor in their marking and how they dealt with the gap control and everything, and it was just a matter of time for when LAFC scored their first goal, and then the floodgates were absolutely going to open. Pretty much all the defenders were bad. I thought Marco Ilicha, Mark, had a couple really good saves in the opening 10 minutes. You could argue that Mario Gomez, their new signing from Uruguay, Spain, I can't remember which, could have had a hat trick in the first 10 minutes. Mark, the Rapids were non-competitive, largely, and there were a lot of bad performances all around the pitch, and Ilicha had a decent start. I thought Rafael Navajo did decent with what little opportunities that he did have. And I thought Sydney Tavares was poor on the ball. I don't want to go through all of my stuff, Mark. I guess let's open with your good thing, Mark. Do you have any good things other than what I have stated?
Good thing. There was one moment. That's where we're at as a team. I was like, ooh, that was a good thing that just happened. And then 89 minutes of utter cow crap. There was a moment. So I hadn't really. I watched the Rapids 2 match where Rafael Navajo and Tavares didn't get into that match. I don't remember. But
no. But Rubio was back in.
Rubio was back. That's right. But it was my first chance to watch Navajo, and he didn't really get a lot of opportunity. They just couldn't get him the ball, and when they did, it was kind of irrelevant. In this game, there was just a really lovely moment in the second half where a ball came in from the right side to Navajo at the top of the box, and he was facing away, and he had his defender at arm's length, and he did just like a Shaquille O'Neal-style post-up move, and I had not noticed until that moment how big Navajo was, and that he was really like a big body center forward, which I guess, you know, I hadn't scouted him to the degree that you had, Matt, and I just wasn't paying attention because I think I'd kind of mentally said to myself, this season is a lost season, I'll gather the information I need to. So that was a nice moment. I mean, I think what I learned in that moment was Navajo has potential to be something of a game-changing forward for us because he's a kind of center forward that we really haven't had. I mean, we had Alan Gordon, who was kind of a big body, post-up, dunker kind of guy, but he was only available to the Rapids and useful at the end of his career in a, you know, 75 minute and onward phase. Like, they started Gordon a couple times, but it really wasn't that useful because with his giant duck feet, he couldn't plod down the field in enough time to be useful. There haven't been a lot of strikers like that for the Colorado Rapids. They've generally gone with smaller guys. You know, you got to go really all the way back to Connor Casey to get a guy who's a big body post up man. So I was excited to see Navajo do his thing and do it with some ability, even though he didn't really get many opportunities, which it leads to another problem, which we'll discuss probably down the season, which is like, is this going to work? Can they feed him the ball? How's he going to fit in with the rest of this offense? But for now, that's my good thing. Matt, did you have a good thing?
It was really good to see Diego Rubio back, and he was his usual feisty self. You know, was able to get into it with Chiellini, get stuck in the opening minutes, and that was the first yellow card. Unfortunate, Mark, that then the Rapids weren't able to take advantage of that. You know, you figure Chiellini, physical body and everything, always on the yellow in the first 5 minutes. You know, let's get him tested. That makes it an easier battle 1v1 for a Rafael Navajo to deal with that, and it wasn't to be, like many other things that the Rapids, I'm sure, had in the game plan. And for that, the only other really good thing, Mark, that I'll kind of piggyback off of what you said about Navajo, which is that I spoke to Robin Fraser, what I think this time last week, it was whatever day Sidney Tavares's first training session with the team that was available to the media. I think it was Wednesday of last week, listeners. And then we got Robin beforehand as well. And he was asked about what he thought about Rafael in that Rapids 2 game, Mark. And he said he liked the movement off the ball. He liked when he did try to do in possession. But ultimately, the team did not do a good enough job in the first half that he played of getting him the ball. And I feel like when the Rapids were able to get out of that first press from LAFC, you know, just backed into the corner, into their own half, and then finally get it to a midfielder who had time and space on the ball and could get it to Navajo, I'm not sure in the first 15 minutes, Mark, that I saw Navajo do one unproductive thing when he got the ball. He got the ball, he held it up, you know, he waited for somebody else to help, and every single time he passed it to somebody, it led to them getting the ball in a good and easy position that then they could have played out of. Mark, that is the exact opposite of what Kevin Cabral has done, and then even when Darren Yapi has done a good job of keeping possession, I don't know that the same passing stats are there, or at least that aspect of how they play through him. So I'm encouraged by what I've seen from Navajo. Mark, will pivot this now to what we saw from Sidney Tavares, who I believe was at fault. And he played in just the first half, folks. So he was not on the field for the fourth goal scored by LAFC. Fourth goal that counted, Mark. I should point out there were two. There was one that was offside and one that was called a foul because apparently Andreas Maxu, our, you know, big, burly, Scandinavian Viking center back, just got completely manhandled by Dennis Belonga, of all people.
I hated that play.
So the Tavares, Mark, gives the ball away in two plays that lead to goals for LAFC. One of them was to Ralph Priso. I don't have in my notes who the other one was to specifically. So maybe there's a question of like what we talked about with the St. Louis City game a couple of months ago now, Mark, of is it on the fault of the person who passed it or is it on the fault of the recipient? But I don't think it was particularly good in possession. I think every single time I saw him challenge physically, Mark, he didn't really do a good job of that. He did end up earning a yellow card for an LAFC player, so he took some abuse, Mark, but, you know, the Rapids got relieved pressure in terms of winning some free kicks in that situation. I don't want to throw out the U22 initiative player, Mark, who's played minutes in the Premier League with the bathwater after a bad 45 minutes against an LAFC team that the Rapids were always going to lose to. But just on that first look that we've seen in MLS minutes, he's giving me off Mark Anthony K vibes, where we saw Mac in his final 2-3 months for the club, I think very clearly was protecting himself from getting injured in physical moments where he could have gotten injured and that would have affected his him going to the World Cup for Canada. And that's a very easy parallel for me to make right now. He's still working his way into fitness. I think we could see a better player. But Mark, as we talked about you know, a couple of shows ago, it took us like two games to be convinced that Connor Ronan was going to be awesome. It took us less than a half to be convinced that Andrew Gutman is awesome. I'm encouraged from what I've seen from Navajo. I want to see a large sample size. If Sidney Tavares was him, if he was the new war daddy, if he was the second coming of Portuguese Kellen Acosta, I feel like that would have displayed itself a little bit more in his debut. But we'll see. A few other things that I want to point out, Mark. I'm officially out on Ralph Preseau. I know I've been the defender of him. I know I've pointed out areas where I think he's had a couple good runs of play in a few games when he's gotten consecutive minutes. I think he had previously in this season done a couple of other things well. He has that physical element. I haven't necessarily seen the chomp. I've seen the bite. I don't think he's good enough on the ball. I don't think he's good enough in his defensive positioning for playing out in possession and then also for reacting to defensive situations. I think him and Tavares were both out of position on that first goal, Mark. Should be pointed out, listeners, as Peter Southwood, that Tavares did get a little bit of an inadvertent bump from the referee as they were tracking back. I don't think that Tavares is catching up to Carlos Vela, and then even then, the guy who scored shoots first time as well. I don't think that's significant, but I could see where the Rapids would think from a bench perspective. That's just another thing that's not going their way that LAFC would have gotten if that had happened to them. So I'm out on Ralph Preseau, Mark. I think this defense is broken. I think this team is broken in possession, and as long as Robin Fraser is going to try to repeatedly do that, I don't see how this team gets results. They did not match the intensity in the first half from LAFC. They did not match the physicality in terms of individual one-on-one battles. They turned the ball over. We've seen them they've been bad on the ball for over a year now, and they had poor gap control and dealing with counterattacks both when LAFC initiated it and when Rapids passes led to turnovers that initiated it. Mark, as much as we want to say that it might have been a good window for Porrick Smith, Andrew Gutman, Rafael Navajo, possibly Tavares as well, I don't see how those three signings fix those deeply underlying issues that the Rapids have that very much will have them competing with Toronto FC for the wooden spoon. Rabbi, any other bad things, or do you want to move on?
I didn't get to do bad thing.
Go, bad things.
Yeah. So I'm with you on Ralph Preseau. I think, you know, folks who've read my writing the last couple weeks have noticed this a significant change from early in the season, May, June, where we were like, let's see how the kid does, to July, where we're like, well, we haven't seen the kid do much, to August, where we're basically like, I don't think the kid's at this level. You know, the thing about a 5-3-2 is it really depends on the midfield three to be able to both link up play and stop things coming through. And the first and second goals, if you go back and look at them, the midfield was really, really bad. Really, really bad. They just weren't in the right positions to make plays, and they had a kind of a sloppy giveaway. And the second play, the second goal, I think it was it was very clear that the central midfield decided to counter press, which means that when they lost the ball to some degree in their opponent's end, they decided to try and press to get the ball back. If you're going to counter press with all of your midfielders and you're only going to have two center backs behind them and you don't win the ball back, then you're basically condemning the team to going into what happened in the second goal, which is like, it was like a 3 or a 4-on-2 by the opposition. And if you're that outnumbered in defense, you're pretty much conceding a goal. Like, that's it. So that's on Ralph Preseau. It's a little bit on Connor Ronan, who I didn't think had a very good game either. It's on Tavares, who did not have a good game at all. Not a great debut. He just wasn't clean in receiving. He wasn't clean on passing. I think where he was, where they tracked, I felt like the spacing was just pretty lousy throughout the first half. Like, there was a lot of like clumping and overlapping in weird positions where I was like, what shape are we trying to achieve defensively, especially immediately in transition? Because once you get transition, you've got like 3 seconds to really determine who's marking, where they're going to mark, where they're going to stop, what lanes they're going to cut off. And I felt like this team just really didn't look very good at that. Two more bad things on this. I think that's on Robin. I feel like this team, however Robin told the teams to set up in the first half didn't work. That could be that Robin, and I said this many times before, it could be that the coach said, here's what we're going to do, and the players didn't do that. But I don't think so. I think Robin set them up to counterpress. I think Robin set them up to kind of come high with their wingers, you know, let Goodman play as an attacking player, let Rosenberry drop back when Goodman was up, and let Goodman drop back when Rosenberry was up, which is something we've seen all season long. It didn't work. The last one is, I think Yelich gave up I wouldn't call it a howler, but he should have stopped the third goal. I mean, I think he should have had that. It just, if you look at the replay, like, it kind of goes through his hand, and rather than make himself big or kind of like reach for it or you know, punch it like he could have, he just kind of gets a hand to it, and maybe it's a failed reaction, but I don't know. It just wasn't. I think, you know, shot stopping is important, and better shot stoppers save that. So wouldn't have mattered. I mean, you know, like, well, if whether we get eviscerated 2-0, 3-0, or 4-0 on the road, it doesn't matter. But you know, and all of that kind of spoiled, you know, Diego Rubio coming back and looking pretty decent overall. But like, this team looked really not up for it. There were two early shots by LAFC also that we didn't even mention, where Illich made great saves on him, great reaction saves, made himself big. So hats off to him for that. But like, you know, this team did not look up for it at all in the first half. And if you're down 3-0, they almost gave up a fourth goal at the end of 45, like, to Carlos Vela, who got like a cheeky back heel from another player and nearly curled it in. Like, this team was just getting absolutely murdered in the first half. They don't look up for it. They don't look up for it against any team anymore. We've got 10 games to go, and it's going to be interesting to figure out, like, can they get any points out of these final 10 games? Because how they play the rest of the season, we're moving into only two important things to finish off the season. Thing one is whether we win the wooden spoon or not, win in air quotes. And thing two is whether this is the worst Rapids team of all time, or potentially one of the top 10 worst MLS teams of all time. Those are not things you want to be guilty of. And for to be the worst Rapids team of all time right now is almost a foregone conclusion. I think the lowest points the team has ever had is like 26 or 27. They've actually got to work pretty hard to get above 27 points at this point, right? They're on 19, and I look at the final 10 games, and I see 8 points there if they play well, and I see 3 if they don't, right? I think this team is really circling the drain in dangerous ways that could be devastating in terms of how bad this team is. Does it matter? Does anybody care that this is the worst Rapids team ever, or just one of the top 3 worst Rapids teams ever? Not really. Me and you need something to keep us up at night, but that's where I'm at with this team. And that's my big thing, by the way, which is like, we're really just going into like, we're not going to be relevant. We're not in the playoff chase. Will we be historically bad right now is really all that matters. You know, Portland, who is 2 spots above us, fired their head coach this past week, Giovanni Savarese. And the question is, you know, if we finish much worse than Portland, and if we lose to Portland, who we're playing in a couple weeks, why do we get to keep our coach if they fired theirs?
We'll touch on Robin Fraser's job security at the end of the episode, Mark. Nice. But just briefly, to your point.
Yes.
We'll illustrate it by, I'll run down the rest of the schedule the Rapids have for their final 10 games of the season next Wednesday. We'll preview this game in a moment. They are at Minnesota United, Timo Pukki and Emmanuel Reynoso back in firing, Mark. That doesn't look good. At RSL for the final leg of the Rocky Mountain Cup. We know how that turns out. Then 2 home games in a week with New England Revolution. We'll see what happens given the secrecy of the Bruce Arena investigation that's going on. Home against Seattle. That doesn't look good.
We're going to lose
at the aforementioned Portland Timbers. Rapids historically don't play well at Providence Park. Home against Vancouver, that's the rescheduled game at that point. Woo-hoo! Vancouver probably fighting for a playoff spot at that point. Then home against Austin for the second to last home game of the season. That'll be a dead rubber game. At Dallas and at Houston, that doesn't look particularly good. And there could be no more fitting game, Mark, for the Rapids to have to close out winning the Wooden Spoon in 2023 than a home game on decision day against RSL with them already clinching the playoffs.
The worst.
I'll just get to my big thing, Mark, which is a quote that we got in the opening statement from Robin Fraser, and then Pat Radigan of Footy 5280 had a really good follow-up question on that. I'll kind of mash the quotes together. Pat, really good job on the magazine. Excited to see it come up again, by the way. But so here's the conglomerated quote about the topic that I'll touch on in a minute. Mark, all of this is from Robin Fraser. Quote, the urgency of the second half has to be the standard for us. The only thing that is acceptable is to play with that level of urgency that we did in the second half. We were able to put ourselves in positions to make it difficult for them. They had a harder time getting out of the second half. I think he means getting out of, like, getting out of their own half in the second half. The standard of the effort and the concentration in the second half is what it needs to be, end quote. Mark, I'm done with Robin's coach speak when it comes to the game plan and the intensity for meeting the opponent. Starts off very poorly, puts them behind the eight ball, if not effectively having them already having the game be over at halftime, and then the opponent going in and being like, you know, LAFC is like, oh, we're up 3-0. When's the last time the Rapids scored 3 goals in an MLS game? Oh, not this season. We're good. Let's take it down to second gear. Let's give a couple of the young guys some substitutions and everything. Let's manage the game. And then you make 2 substitutions. You adjust the formation. You bring on Brian Galvan and Calvin Harris, who are going to go antagonize people and try and change the game or put in a performance that would put them into the starting 11. And LAFC drops off their intensity and you still lose the second half 1-0. We heard it against St. Louis, Mark. I feel like we heard it against Charlotte, albeit that game was a draw. I'm over Robin talking about how improving the performance and improving the intensity, the mentality in the second half in a game that they ultimately lost, in a second half that they didn't even win scoreline wise, like, the, you know, giving up 2 or 3 goals and looking completely out of it 25 minutes into the game, and then playing where you play the opponent even from an XG or some other stat standpoint, and then getting 0-0 in the second half. Like, I'm done with that. And so if it was that big of a deal, Mark, why wasn't that intensity and that focus there in the first half? Was it tactically, like you pointed out, how maybe the initial game plan was flawed from the start? Is it personnel wise with the fact that I thought Galvan and Harris came on and were decent, and Lalas Abubakar and Sydney Tavares were subbed off at halftime and did not have a good first half performance? Or is it the fact, Mark, that the Rapids played a team that's absolutely better than them, and that team went down to second gear at most in the first half and still created more opportunities and put the ball in the net 2 times, albeit with one of them getting called off for a 50-50 foul? You know, I'm done with that. And so Robin coming in and lamenting the result, but then praising the performance and everything, like, that's coach speak at this point for me. The only thing that matters at this point is results, and we'll get to with the schedule. It's going to be very, very difficult. Mark, we're going to talk about the Rapids' upcoming loss to the Death Loons, but first, tell our listeners how they can best support Holding the High Line, the official podcast of Max Brados' research, and most importantly, how they can get one of the few remaining Cheers to the Six pint glasses.
There's only 8 left, folks. We're down to just a few more pint glasses for our Highliners. What is a Highliner, you ask? Well, that's a person who proudly supports this podcast by becoming a subscriber to all things HTHL Media. Our podcast edited and directed by the amazing Matt Pollard, and our Substack quarterbacked by chief writer and merch scoundrel Mark Goodman, a.k.a. Rabbi and Red. Our photographer is John Babiak, currently on assignment in New Zealand. Actually, John's back. Thank God for John. Nice job, buddy. And our graphics guy is Dwayne Brown. But friends, it's not just teamwork that makes the dream work. It also costs a little bit of cheddar, moolah, dollar bucks to cover our expenses and occasionally skull a pint to celebrate our writing efforts. That's where Highliners come in. For $5 a month or $42 a year, you can support our writing and podcasting, and you'll get this nifty mug with our logo. It's really a pint glass. You'll be supporting citizen soccer journalism, and we appreciate it. Folks, the last piece of advice I can give you on our pint glasses is the Cheers to the Six rubs off in your dishwasher if you're not careful. But if you hand wash it, turns out okay. But also, I've actually had some pretty good luck with both, even in the dishwasher. So treat your pint glass right, and it'll treat you right as well. You can toast to Lionel Messi possibly winning the Golden Boot in just 10 games by watching it, or you can drown your sorrows after another Rapids loss. But there's only 8 more pint glasses to go, folks. So if you want to join up and be a Highliner, there's only limited supplies remaining.
Listeners, this coming Wednesday at the Allianz, the Colorado Rapids will be taking on Minnesota United. They do not play this weekend. I should point out, listeners, we are podcasting before Minnesota's Sunday game against Seattle Sounders, so maybe that'll have an effect from a form or a personnel standpoint, Mark, or maybe some possible injuries happen against these Sounders. But in any case, Rabbi, we find the Colorado Rapids still in 28th in Major League Soccer. Guess what, Mark?
What's that?
Despite Lionel Messi winning a major trophy and then helping to win a semifinal, the Colorado Rapids are still above Inter Miami in the table, baby.
Albeit, very long.
Yeah, it's just by a point, listeners, and Inter Miami has 2 games in hand, so there's that. Mark, I think it's a 3-way race. I think it's a 2-way race now for the wooden spoon, with I think clearly Inter Miami is probably going to make the playoffs for me, and so I think it's between them and Toronto FC. Both teams are on 19 points. Toronto or Colorado does have a game in hand. 24 games played, 3-11-10 is their record, and they have a minus 18 goal difference, Mark. And away from the Richard this season, they are 2-7-3. We'll be taking on Minnesota United, who I believe are in a playoff spot. They are in 9th. They're in the final playoff spot, Mark. They've got 31 points off of 23 games played, a record of 8-8-7, a goal difference of minus 2. They're not that good of a home team, however, Rabbi. They are just 2-2-6 so far this season. It should be pointed out, folks, that from a form chart standpoint, Minnesota is on the up. Obviously, they were without Emmanuel Reynoso for the better part of 2 months, and they did just sign their big striker acquisition, Mark, was Timo Pukki, who Premier League and Championship fans will remember from Norwich City. Mark, basically Scandinavian buzz cut Alexander Mitrovic, and then more of a goal merchant in transition than headers on corners when it came to dominating the championship and getting promotion, only to just be relegated the next year. So, Mark, the last game that we saw in... for Minnesota, they got absolutely destroyed by Nashville in the Leagues Cup quarterfinal, and then they resumed MLS play on the weekend with a 2-0 victory at NYCFC. Mark, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this. The Rapids aren't good on the road. They are not good against elite players. I think Timo Pukki is capable of being a very good striker in Major League Soccer. And then let me just make sure, did Emmanuel Reynoso start? Yes, Reynoso started, but he did sub off in that game for Minnesota. Mark, Reynoso's one of the best Rapids killers in Major League Soccer. I have this game being a loss.
Oh, yeah, for sure. They picked up Ismail Tajiri Shradi also from, I think, Greece in the window, which is a pretty interesting, kind of strange move. I mean, I think it's great for him to come back. But this is a very strong team that has aspirations every single year. Their fan base is rabid, and they really, really believe that they can do things and show up and compete at a high level. They have something to play for, considering, like you said, Matt, they're in 9th place. This is a solid team that has a lot going on. But I actually think the other thing that's interesting about these two teams is I feel like the Rapids and Minnesota have history. Their first season in the league was the Rapids, I think, gave them their first points. They gave them a draw, and it was a really enjoyable series, and there just felt like some sort of kind of like competitive atmosphere and spirit between the two teams. I think there are few teams I can say in the Western Conference where I feel like every time we've played them, it's been an entertaining match and it's been close. But I think that that's pretty much our brand with Minnesota, that those games actually turn out pretty good. I don't think I've ever watched a Minnesota Rapids game where I thought to myself, we're going to get schwacked or we're being played off the pitch or whatever. We show up in those games. We look pretty good. They're competitive and they're fun. And so I think this game could go down as a draw. This is a game that the Rapids might squeak out. I think the question right now with Colorado is last year they were leaky at the back, but they scored a few goals. This season's narrative is basically we cannot find the net with a flashlight, a feather, a spoon, a compass, a team of
the Marauders map.
Right. If we had a bunch of howitzers and an entire panzer division, we couldn't get the ball over the line. Like, we're completely incapable of scoring goals. And that doesn't seem to be changing yet. You know, if we can get Ronan having an excellent game, some wide players who will provide additional scoring effort, you know, maybe I know this is going to be heresy for the haters out there, and I'm okay with that. But like, maybe Sam Nicholson needs to be on the pitch with Diego Rubio and Rafael Navajo in order for the offense to click. I don't know what that looks like, but I'm throwing out there that like, the offense didn't look right this last week with our two quote unquote best offensive players, you know, paired up top. There needs to be maybe another effort. I also don't think that Gutman and Rosenberry are the right wide wingbacks to provide kind of attacking service. Gutman at its best kind of looks a little bit like Sam Vines in terms of his ability to maraud forward, but I don't think they're a like-for-like situation. By the way, side note, Sam Vines is struggling to get into it with Royal Antwerp. He's having a hard time finding a spot on the field. He's been kind of passed over.
And he came off the bench in their Champions League game.
Yeah, but off the bench in Belgium is not really what he was dreaming of. And also in the two previous games, Matt, he got off the bench in one of them. He wasn't even in the 18 for one of them. So I think he's not quite getting exactly what he wants. I think he should be in the Belgian league. You should be starting, you know, like that's what you aspire to, because if you want to keep moving up leagues. But anyways, point being, I don't think we've quite figured out how to get the most out of Navajo and Rubio. Is that Lewis on the field? Is that Nicholson on the field? Is, you know, is, as Max Bratos noted, is Michael Barrios the missing piece that we've sent along to the Galaxy and we'll never see again? Was he the thing that would have sparked these two guys? We'll never know at this point, but we've got to find some offense against Minnesota. So I'm calling this as a draw. I'm calling it as a 1-1 draw. I don't know why the Rapids are going to get a draw, but I just have faith.
But put a name on who scores for the Pits.
Ooh, let's say Rubio finally gets in there, because otherwise, you know, the one thing that I think would be funny at the end of the year, in addition to us being getting the wooden spoon, would be having the leader of the team in goals have an altogether high of 2. Have like 7 guys on the Colorado Rapids have a draw with the most goals scored with 2, which is where we're at right now. The leader on the team for goals scored is Andrew Gutman, who has 3 goals. Of course, all of them came when he was with Atlanta. So,
okay, Mark, let's get into it. I feel like, Rabbi, you and I did not talk about this. I don't know if my article inspired your article, Mark, but we do have we've got an Ask HTHL from good friend of the pod, Eric Stitson, who tweeted at Rapids 9, who X-posted at Rapids 96 podcast. If Robin is sacked for performance, whom does Porik hire? Hashtag Ask HTHL. Ooh. And so, Mark, you and I both wrote, I think, really well researched and really well written columns on this topic from different approaches. So I think they complement each other well. You documented the problems that the Rapids had, what their root causes could be, and then do they support support that Robin Fraser is flawed as a head coach and should be relieved of his duties, or do they support that there's some other issue that should be dealt with within the club, and possibly those problems are a combination, and then part of it's Robin's fault and part of it's other people's fault, and you know, such as, I don't know, maybe President Porik Smith, for example. And then I looked at it from a historical standpoint, Mark, because I was really curious to see, you know, people talk about history and how long and wonky this league is and how weird and, you know, bottom feeding KSC is in terms of operating the club, of the, you know, does the club's approach to personnel decisions, and is that so far different from every single other MLS team in history that that is an indication of setting a new record for ineptitude, and then what lessons can we learn from that? So I will link both of these articles in the show notes for listeners who want to go through it, Mark, but basically the main thing that I noted is that there's when you miss the playoffs and then you miss the playoffs again for the second straight year, and that is coupled with winning the Wooden Spoon, that is not good for the lead technical executive and then the lead head coach within an MLS team. Listeners, it would be unprecedented for the Rapids to run it back with Porrick Smith as the president, Fran Taylor as the general manager, sporting director, I can't remember what his role is anymore, and then Robin Fraser as the head coach. All three of those people are in the same role that they are in right now come the first game of next season. That will be the first time ever that an MLS team has had an established coaching staff in 1 year. This 1 year is 2022, in case you're wondering, listeners. And so miss the playoffs. Second year, miss the playoffs and win the Wooden Spoon, and then third year, retain all of that staff entirely. And this led to, ultimately, Mark, me concluding that you've got two really good case studies that are similar to the Colorado Rapids, and one of them was the Veljko Paunovic era of the Chicago Fire, where basically all of Chicago Fire fans were wondering how Nelson Rodriguez still had a job. You had an owner that was okay in terms of budgeting and funding wise, but otherwise just let inept people continue to run the club going nowhere. It got so bad and so toxic, the owner was like, okay, I'm out. New owner comes in and says, all of you are incompetent and have been here too long. You are leaving, and we're going back to Soldier Field, and we're spending a bunch of money, and we're going to be better. Spoiler alert, listeners, the Chicago Fire are still in that rebuild, and they are possibly going to miss the playoffs, and they have an interim head coach because they fired Ezra Henderson, even though it wasn't ultimately his fault. And the other comparison, Mark, is the 2008 to 2013-ish San Jose Earthquakes, who did win a supporter shield during that time, but otherwise had an owner who didn't care to spend a whole lot of money, wasn't super ambitious, was fine just leaving people alone who he had, I guess, a comfortable relationship with, and was just content with mediocrity. And then those people, Frank Yallop, and then I can't remember who the executive was in the front office on that side, overperformed in 2012, winning the supporter shield, and basically coasted on that until their contracts ran out, and were basically told, okay, like, that was a blip, not a trend. We're actually going to move on and try and be a little bit more ambitious. And surprise, listeners, the Quakes are still bad. So those are the two parallels that we have, Mark, and both of them are fundamentally hands-off owners who I think are far too patient, are mid to lower mid in terms of the amount of money they spend, certainly aren't expressing their ambition with how they handle their personnel or the resources that they give them as well. And then largely it's people who have one particularly good year and then coast off that when really it was a false signal, like how in hindsight we can say that about the 2016 season and the 2021 season. Mark, where are you on the, since you broke down all of the various ways that one could think about who's at fault for the Colorado Rapids, who are you giving the largest slice of blame pie to? Is it Robin Fraser? And are you at the point of the view that Robin Fraser should or could lose his job before the end of the season?
So I never advocate anybody getting fired. Do I think he's going to get fired by the end of the season? My guess would be that they play out the season and they, if he is allowed to continue next year, it would be a surprise to me. I would expect more that the season ends on what is our last game, October 23rd or something like that is decision day. Sub 21st, Matt thinks. That like 3 days or 5 days after we get the season ends, we get an announcement from the club on a Friday that Robin, because that's news dump day, that Robin has been relieved of his duties or has, you know, terminated by mutual consent or something like that. Matt, was the Ask HTHL about who would replace him? I feel like...
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute, but yeah, right. That's the question.
You tell me when, because I made a list, baby. I'm ready with this question. I am locked and loaded to give my answers. But that's how I think it goes down. I think that Robin Fraser is probably in very, very deep water right now. There is a world where you know, when you're a dead man walking, there's just no point in finishing out the season, where the Rapids kind of, you know, turn him and say, like, we could fire you in October, but, like, you know, you probably want to call the movers now. So, you know, start filling out your resume and take a long walk, which would mean that I'd say he's got 4 games or fewer left in that world. But I'm going to say he's probably playing out the rest of the season.
I agree with you, Mark. I think the most likely person from a personnel standpoint to lose their job at this point is Robin Fraser. I think it's just become abundantly obvious to me from what I've seen this season and then in the media availability we've had with Porrick Smith. And then on top of that, them having contract extensions for all of these people having contract extensions. But obviously, I think Porrick and Wayne Brandt are beyond Robin Fraser in terms of the duration of that contract. They're not going anywhere. The only person that they are have to answer to is Josh Kroenke. And Mark, I think if I put a bunch of polls out now on Burgundy Wave's Twitter page or on Holding the High Line, I think if I asked, like, generally, are you out on Porrick Smith? I think the majority of the fan base would say yes. Yeah. I'm not sure about Robin. I think it would be close. I would not be surprised if it was like 60-40 or like 65-35 in terms of out on Robin. I think if I gave them a choice between you could get rid of one of the two, I think it would be Porrick. I think if I gave a multiple choice, three options of fire Porrick, fire Robin, fire both of them, I think fire both of them slightly would win a plurality of that. I think if any of these polls I gave them any of the options that I've suggested or KSC sells the team, I think KSC sells the team still wins that. But so, you know, Mark, you and I are in agreement here. We're agnostic towards firing. I think first and foremost, we see Porrick and Robin and Wayne and all of the players and everybody at the club first and foremost as human beings. And so I'm not going to advocate for that. But I mean, these times. Giovanni Savarese was let go after six, I think, relatively successful years for the Portland Timbers. And 4 years is a really long time to have a job where if you're not building on something or if there's impetus and everything, that it's, you know, that it's like that. And I think on some level, saving face to give some indication that the club's heading in the right direction, the lowest hanging fruit here is to change the head coach. As we saw what Portland did, as we saw what Chicago Fire did earlier this year with Ezra Henderson, as I'm sure we will see with at least one other team besides the Colorado Rapids in Major League Soccer between now and December 31st. I'm still of the belief, so I think it was the first argument that you made bullet point or numbered in your article for Backpass Rabbi, which is I still think first and foremost the failure of the season falls on Porrick Smith. I don't think he addressed enough of the underlying issues that this team had as well. And I think as soon as we talked about this a couple of pods ago, I think Andrew Gutman's great. I think Andrew Gutman is a fantastic replacement for Sam Vines. My issue isn't with the acquisition or Andrew Gutman. It's the fact that it came, you know, 18 months, 2 years too late. Sidney Tavares is the latest potential replacement for Kellen Acosta in a midfield that has desperately missed Kellen Acosta in the last 2 years. The defense continues to be an issue. They didn't go out and get a center back. Sidney Tavares could be amazing. Andrew Gutman could continue to be amazing. Rafael Navajo continue to be amazing. This is still a back line and a core group of midfielders outside of sometimes Connor Ronan that piss the ball away in bad areas and lead to good opportunities for better teams. I don't know how Robin can fix that, Mark, without, we've seen this argument elsewhere of do the Rapids just go 4-4-2, you know, defense, play hard, run fast, go for transitions, go for set pieces, since that's still an emphasis for the club. And on some level, Mark, I think that would be waving the white flag from a coaching standpoint. That would be acknowledging that the Rapids way right now cannot be successful. So to your point, Mark, where you asked the question of the approach that the Rapids had to start the game against LAFC, is the game plan flawed, or is it the execution of the players that are flawed? And how much of the way that Robin's trying to play is being influenced or being enforced by the people above him at the club? And then that is problematic either because the process is flawed or because the roster is deeply bad. Robin's starting to lose me personally, Mark, in that I'm not sure he is the person who can turn this around. As we'll get to in a minute, I think there's going to be some really hard options in terms of, I don't think this is a super desirable job right now for by MLS opportunities. And you're locked into your 3D pleas at this point, at least for the start of the year. I suppose if, you know, if Jose Mourinho comes in, Mark, and he decides that he doesn't like, you know, that he doesn't like one of the Portuguese players as well, I suppose they could terminate that loan early and tell their parent clubs that they're not going to pick up the option as well. But like there's many aspects of this roster that you're locked into right now. And so the other thing that I've also thought about as well, Mark, is how much turnover we could just automatically see based on roster decisions for the end of the season. Porik now said multiple times in media availability that the first 25-30 minutes against St. Louis, when they lost 2-0 at St. Louis earlier this season, was a low point for him at the club. I have to believe that last night was a low point as well. And so far, Mark, looking at the roster and the main players and everything, the guys that you've jettisoned aren't the ones who have been poor in that game as well. I don't think you can have Lalasu Boubacar and Danny Wilson back starting as center backs for this team next year. I don't think they particularly have really good sell-on value. And if they continue to get minutes when they've played so poorly, other than Moise Bombito, that suggests to me that somewhere in there the young guys don't have the trust of the coaching staff. Is that a misevaluation by the coaching staff, an indication that you should change them? Or are these young players and all this depth and all this bench and youthful potential sell-on upcoming young players that the Rapids have, you know, drummed up and everything, are they just not that good? As bad as Ralph Priso's been for the Rapids in training and preseason, was he miles above Oli Larraz to where Oli Larraz is captaining R2 and playing well? You know, or is there something else going on there? All of these are questions I don't have the answer to, but these are the underlying issues that are going to determine who's ultimately at fault. The difference is Porik Smith has the ability to get rid of anybody at the club. Only one person has the ability to get rid of Porik, and that person seems to be satiated. And one really easy way for Porik to drum up, hey, we're moving in the right direction, we're making a decision, is to change the coaching staff and then, you know, get some good PR in that way. Mark, anything else you want to say specifically about Robin's jobs? I guess, so you think he makes it to the end of the season, Mark. What would have to happen for you for him to get fired before that decision day match?
I mean, just like blowouts where the team looks completely chaotic and he's lost the locker room, or of course, a full blown post game conference Anthony Hudson style meltdown where he literally blames everybody but himself and does a PR nightmare. Those are the only two possibilities. But, you know, I think the interesting thing about the Portland firing, which was Severese got fired after, I think they lost 5-0 or something like that. And that's an interesting, that's like a philosophical question about, and see, it happens in the Premier League all the time, where like, you know, there's like rumors that a coach is on the hot seat and like this next game is a big one. And then they just kind of no height the bar and things go really badly and the coach gets fired summarily. And I'm always kind of like a little mystified that like you get to a point in a coach's career. It happens in the English Premier League way more than it happens in MLS, but you get to the point in a coach's career where you're like, this game will determine everything. And that feels really weird. How many of us have ever gone into a work presentation or a week at our jobs where we've basically been like, well, Matt, you better perform at your engineering firm or they're gonna fire you. Like this week, it's all up to that. Your performance up to here has been a little bit good and a little bit bad, but like what happens this week will determine. It's a weird paradigm, and I don't really buy into it. It's why I think a whole season makes more sense than like, you know, anything that happens in the next 10 games.
Yeah, I think if they were to clinch the wooden spoon, Mark, I think that would be one. If they win the wooden spoon, I think Robin goes regardless of when that happens. If it's the last day of the season, he goes after, you know, that following Monday. And then if it happens before then, I could see them saying like, hey, let's, you know, move on. And then, you know, at least try to put in a new interim head coach and then basically tell him, play the kids, try to build something for next year. You're not going to be here next year anyways. Do it or you're gone too, kind of a situation. And then to your point as well, just the emphasis that we've seen on the team not playing with intensity, not playing with maximum effort. and then that leading to just them being non-competitive in so many matches as well. I think, ironically, then it's more about the performance and the intent and the impetus than it is the actual scoreline. At the end of the day, you know, if it was four Golassos, Mark, or if it was three Golassos, then a really questionable penalty that LAFC gets, but Colorado was never going to get. And then McCarthy stands on his head and Chiellini's fantastic against Rafael Navajo and Diego Rubio hits the crossbar. And then Keegan Rosenberry has a screamer that's, you know, a save of the week kind of a candidate. There's a path forward to the performance last night, Mark, and the scoreline still being the same, in which we feel like the Rapids are building in the right direction. The fact that the same issues that they've had for over a year now underlie make me think this team's broken. I think part of its roster, part of it is on Robin's approach to the games as well. But just the, like, the Navajo is, like, Navajo would have to be messy if he's saving this team, Mark. And so I think on some level, that's going to have to start to improve significantly. And I'm not sure how that does, because if Robin Fraser's a broken record with us, Mark, I have to believe on some level he's getting extremely repetitive in a way that maybe isn't resonating with the locker room anymore. And with some of those players who've been hearing him say very similar things for the last 4 years in a season that I think they're probably just waiting for it to be over so that they can have a clean slate come 2023. But yeah, I think if you look at it, if there's four losses in a row and they're all 3-0, 4-0, and the team doesn't look competitive and they're out of the game by the 30th minute, like they were against LAFC, like they were against St. Louis as well, I think at that point, I think Robin and the players will have forced Porik's hand at that point. So I guess with that, Mark, let's go to the Ask HDHL. Rabbi, you made a list. Who do you think the Rapids should consider? Who plausibly would take this very non-plum job in Major League Soccer right now?
Well, okay, so the default position about who the best choice at manager would be, or who the Rapids would actually go with, is some manager in Scandinavia who you and I have never heard of, right? Like the head of some team in Norway or Sweden or Denmark who's really, really doing great right now, because that's kind of one of those trends you see in Major League Soccer, where if a team has an American-born coach, they immediately, and it doesn't work out, they immediately follow it up with a European-born coach who immediately doesn't work out. Another direction the Rapids could go in, which I always think is a really good idea, is to go with a successful USL coach. It's really rare. They haven't been doing so well in the last couple of years, but there are two coaches that I respect a lot right now. One is Pittsburgh Riverhounds' own Bob Lilly. All he does is win, 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 no matter what. He's never, in 23 years of coaching soccer at every different level, except for MLS, he's never had a losing season. He's been very close to MLS a couple times. He was with Vancouver right before, the year before they went up. I think he was an assistant either in Portland or in Seattle the year before they went up, too. So Bob Lilly is a very good coach. Another possible guy at that position is Neil Collins. Neil Collins came in when the Tampa Bay Rowdies were kind of a hot mess. He took over for them. He was a player coach for a year. He turned them around as a player coach and gave them a half a good season. I think this was back in 2019. And they've been absolutely a very difficult team to play in USL ever since then. So those are my two favorites. The third option, who just became available today, is Landon Donovan. That would be a great pick for the Rapids because he's a name brand. I think the challenge with him is I don't think anybody is particularly sure whether he has the tactical acumen. He would come off as a player's coach, though. I think the other challenge with high talent level players is, you know, they don't typically have a great record of coaching because they say, like, why don't you just dribble 40 yards down the field, meg four guys, and curl it into the upper 90? And the answer is, because I can't do that because I'm not you, Landon. So, but I think Landon Donovan is an interesting possibility. The next four names I'm going to list are basically usual suspects, human beings who are on the market right now. I will say this, I don't really want any of these four players. There's one of them who I think is an interesting possibility, but they are available and their resumes will absolutely end up in the pile. They are Bob Bradley, Vlatko Andonovic, Caleb Porter, and Jason Kreis.
Kreis has been on the ice for long enough that I don't know that anybody's actually thinking of him anymore. And Caleb Porter also is kind of like, he's done really good things. He had some good years with Columbus and good years with Portland before he had bad years with Columbus and he had bad years with Portland. So I like Caleb Porter. I've never had a problem with him. Folks have definitely had negative things. I think some Rapids fans would recoil at the idea of Jason Kreis being our manager, considering he was with RSL. He also had some personnel problems and HR problems when he was with Orlando. If you're really good at sleuthing Twitter or X, as it were, you might be able to uncover. But I don't think he's a likely candidate. I also don't think Bob Bradley wants the job in Colorado, realistically. I think Porter and Kreis might. Vlatko Andonovic is a really interesting name because he was coaching the U.S. women's national team. It didn't go super great, and he's only coached women up till now. He coached NWSL, but I do think it's an interesting possibility. And I have one more name, and then Matt can tell me why I'm wrong and why I'm stupid. The last name has been floated. Every time the Rapids have looked for a coach, either a fan or an agent has reached out to me with this name, which is really interesting. And OG Rapids fans will remember this guy, and the rest of you will be like, who? And that's Aitor Karanka. Aitor Karanka just got let go as in June as the manager for Maccabi Tel Aviv, who play in either the Europa League or Champions League in Europe. Before that, he was managing in La Liga. He has a lot of background and experience. He is a Spanish national player by birth. Why do I connect him with the Rapids? Why would a guy who's been coaching in top leagues in Europe want to come to Colorado? Because he played for the Rapids in, I think, 1999 and 2000. So he has a Colorado connection. The other thing is I've had agents reach out to me asking about him as if he was interested in the position and somebody was looking to start some media buzz about him. So I think he's got the pedigree. By the way, Matt, here's a fun fact. Do you know who Maccabi Tel Aviv's coach is right now?
I think we covered this because I think you said it was a guy who, you know, like we were talking about a particular coach and you're like, oh, he's coaching some crappy team. Is it a former U.S. national team coach or staffer?
Weirder than that, it's a former LA Galaxy superstar.
Is it Robbie Keane?
Robbie Keane is the head coach in Tel Aviv right now. It's true. Isn't that weird?
That is weird.
I know, it blows my mind. I just can't. I can imagine Robbie Keane talking to his players, you know, three quarters of whom are Israeli. And because of his Irish accent, the players turning and being like, I don't know what he just said. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's Israel. Israel's a place where thick European accents in English don't work. And I can't imagine someone taught Robbie Keane how to speak Hebrew. Although I volunteer as Robbie Keane's Hebrew and language translator in Israel. I will quit my job right now. You hear me on this podcast and fly to Tel Aviv. Now, by the way, my modern Hebrew is not very good and I never really learned all the terms in soccer, but I don't care. I'll do it anyways. All right. That's my list, Matt. You tell me why it's stupid.
I don't think it's stupid. I think it's a really good list of coaches who are available. I just the question that I would have first as an interviewee, Mark, is just the direction of the club and ways in which that the Rapids way is either incomplete or needs to be redeveloped or abandoned as well. You know, as I mentioned, it's not obvious to me that someone is it's not obvious to me that, you know, that this would be a plum job in the offseason for someone to come after. You know, if you look at the last big hirings, you know, really going back a decade in the case of the Colorado Rapids, you know, Gary Smith was kind of a, you know, guy, was a diamond in the rough who was looking for an opportunity and willing to come to the United States. Oscar Parejo, who I think had been an assistant a few other places and then needed his first head coaching job. Pablo Mastroianni straight out of retiring, and it was like the, well, what am I going to do now that I'm a retired soccer player? And the only job that he could think of that would be wonderful for him would be the head coach of his former club that he was a legend at as well. And then it was Anthony Hudson, who had been in the international game for so long, wanted to come into the club game, and then had some level of roots in the American soccer system to where it kind of, to where they're, it made sense for both parties as well. And then Robin Fraser, who had been a longtime assistant, had been interviewed for a number of head coaching jobs, some of which he thought he was interviewed insincerely to fulfill a quota rather than actually being taken seriously as a candidate. Mark, I have strong reason to believe that Robin Fraser was interviewed with the round with Anthony Hudson, and the club went with Anthony Hudson as well. And so, like, it's a coach off the radar. It's typically not been a guy with an established MLS pedigree. I don't believe off the top of my head it's at least a player who, as a head coach, has ever won an MLS Cup. I don't believe that that the Rapids have appointed a head coach ever who won an MLS Cup elsewhere as well in that regard. So it's someone off the beaten path because it's somebody who's looking for an opportunity, who sees this as a serious opportunity. Mark, I love being an engineer. I'm really good at my job and everything. I'm not making $1 million a year. I don't know if Robin Fraser's making $1 million a year, but we knew that Bruce Serena, when he was head coach and GM, was making $4 million with the LA Galaxy, and we knew Tata Martino, when he was winning MLS Cup with Atlanta, was making $2 million. You offer me $500K to be the head coach of the Colorado Rapids, and if it flames out, I get fired, but I still get to keep the $500K for quitting my engineering job in 2024, I'm going to take it. Why? Because that would be a fun opportunity. I'd get to do something that's fun and doesn't have some of the nuances of engineering that can be a frustration for me. And it'd be a 5X increase on my salary, six or seven. I might have to do some math there, listeners, if we're depending on what Porrick Smith is offering. So that's obviously a great opportunity for me, Mark. I'm also horribly underqualified for that job as well. And so that's where I'd have frustrations that the Rapids, based on where they are spending and then expectations and then whatever Porrick Smith would say behind closed doors, that would be compelling for any of the highly qualified candidates that you had recommended. And then the other question that I would have, Mark, that I would be in our next media availability, which listeners were hoping is to be the first full week of September, in case you're wondering. But if we ever, if Robin's fired, Mark, the next question I'm going to have.
By the way, just a real quick pause. Kudos to Matt for being the guy in the press pool to ask Robin, "Are you worried about your short-term future?" Once in a while, folks are critical that the media handle these guys with kid gloves. It's always difficult to be the guy who asks the toughest question in the room, Matt. Battle scars on you. Good job asking the toughest question.
I once again apologize to the listeners and to the Rapids community, Mark, for the fact that my questions do not lead to deep, profound, and successful institutional change at the Colorado Rapids. I am a failure. It is my fault. I'm taking radical responsibility.
Stop.
I'm going to keep fighting, and I'm going to do so until the slathered name of No One Good FC is rack where it's supposed to be, which is being a perennial playoff press corps and winning a second media cup. So the question I would ask, Mark, whenever Robin gets fired, if I speak to Porrick on the record before the head coach is announced, one of my first questions would be, you've been the head executive at the club since 2018. You haven't had a good playoff record. The Rapids way has not come to fruition in terms of at least the team being a perennial playoff team, and you oversaw the two most recent head coaching searches and head coaching hirings, and you've also made the decision directly to fire the last three head coaches the club has had. Why should fans, why should anyone put faith in you that this process will be different or that this will lead to success given all that has happened? Be curious to know what Porrick would say. I'm sure we'd get a polite and well-curated, almost rehearsed answer about that and making some excuses and then acknowledging some of the positives and the bad. But in any case, Mark, I'm at 30% battery. We're into stoppage time in terms of me actually editing this thing. Anything else, or can we please get out of here?
Let's call it a day. Matt, you got an ad read about our Believe folks who carry the thing, or do you want to tell them how to hit us on the socials and write us a letter?
Let's talk about the Believe and the switchover next pod. Listeners, you can follow us collectively on Twitter X at @soccer_rabbi, @LWSMattPollard, and @Rapids96Podcast. Check out Mark's written work on the Substack at holdingthehighline.substack.com. That's also where you can become a paid Highliner. $5 a month or $42 for the year. $42 for the month for the year does get you one of the few remaining pint glasses we have. Most of my Rapids written content is at burgundywave.com right now. And then our greater soccer content, if you want to consume all the things that we are saying about soccer, for me, also at lastwordonsports.com/soccer, and then locally in the Bridge City for Rabbi at Pittsburgh Soccer Now. Send us your questions like Eric Stitson did on Twitter X at using the hashtag AskHTHL, and then go ahead and email us if you want to get at us in long form at rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Listeners, we will see you next week, probably after Minnesota, but before the Labor Day weekend game at RSL for the Rocky Mountain Cup Derby.
Peace.
Enough said.